Dev with Crime Hive, and this is going to be a part two of the Idaho murders case. We're talking about how he was caught, and recently the search warrant was unsealed, so we have some new evidence and really some new insight into law enforcement's thinking around this case and the type of evidence they're looking to gather as this case unfolds. Suspect Brian Koberger is still currently in jail awaiting his court appearance in June. We do have some new information on what was collected in that search warrant. So that's what we're going to talk about in this video.
Crime Hive.
Crime Hive.
True crime buzz.
Okay, so looking at the search warrant that police put together when they went and searched Brian Koberger's apartment, they located some interesting items. The first item on that list that was seized was one nitrite type black glove. So we're talking about a disposable type of glove, you know, one that potentially, you know, nurses, doctors would wear when dealing with patients. So this glove, don't know if it is in fact Brian Koberger's or if it's even linked to the crime, but they did collect it and it was mentioned. Next was a Walmart receipt with a Dickies tag. Now, looking at some different articles about what that could entail, Dickies is typically associated with workwear. So, you know, think coveralls or other type of workwear. And so the thought process there is potentially he wore some items at that crime and those items were collected and they were of interest. So then you've got some Marshall's receipts. So not quite sure what that entails. It could be related to the crime as well. But of course, law enforcement's going to collect all sorts of items that they think could be possible evidence, but it always, you know, that's always to be determined. It's not always going to be evidence, but it's notable. The fourth item that I thought was really interesting is they collected dust from a vacuum container. So this can be powerful evidence. If in fact Brian Koberger is, you know, guilty of this crime, right now he's still considered a suspect and he's still innocent until proven guilty, but there is a lot of developing evidence and it's a very circumstantial case, but this dust container could contain all sorts of DNA evidence, trace evidence, hairs and fibers and all sorts of things that forensics could link to this potential case. There were quite a few different hair strands that were collected. So in the search warrant, they mentioned 8 possible hair strands. So that could be very notable. And then also looking at it, there were a lot of other possible hairs that were collected, and this could be from a potential animal or human. So this is really important because there are cases where animal hairs and the DNA from those hairs linking to a specific dog and to a specific crime scene have convicted people. There's plenty of cases where people have been convicted because of small circumstantial evidence, well, really powerful circumstantial evidence with DNA gathered from the hairs of animals and connecting that to a suspect. I actually did a couple cases on that recently on my TikTok channel, for example. So really interesting potential evidence there. They also collected a Fire TV stick with the cord / plug. Curious what that might entail. We'll certainly learn more in court. Then they collected a computer tower, and this is potentially massive as well because, as you might know, most of these cases are solved digitally now. So there's a lot of forensic evidence from digital data, and this could be a treasure trove of data, potentially, right? We're talking about computer searches and the history with those searches that could go into the planning and the organization of this particular crime, including research on the victims in this case. You know, the 4 University of Idaho students, was their data compiled with them and or the property, the King Road property. So they're going to look for those connections because, again, we still don't quite know a motive with this case at this particular time as I do this podcast. But there have been articles surfacing recently that do show possible connections. So, for example, People came out with an article that there were several messages from Idaho suspect Brian Koberger on Instagram. So apparently he had slid into the DMs of one of the Idaho victims and had messaged them something to the effect of, you know, hey, how are you? And did not get a response, but apparently was very persistent and reached out multiple times, but still never received a response. There were also recent articles that Brian Koberger followed three of the victims. So three of the female victims. You also have one male victim, but he apparently followed three of them, and it's believed that they did not follow him back. But that's still developing, so I'm not quite sure how those sources came up with that information, if the family is saying some things or exactly. I do know that Brian Koberger's Instagram was public for a short period of time before it was deleted. And so some of that information certainly could have been gathered during that time. So really interesting there as police are trying to connect the dots on a possible connection, a motive. Interesting side thought, I did a video that the BTK killer, right? So we're talking about Dennis Rader years ago. Some people believe that there might be a connection with him and this case because Brian Koberger studied with renowned forensic expert Dr. Ramsland, who studied the BTK killer and wrote books about him. And he actually went on the record saying that he did not have any communication with Brian Koberger, but believed the crimes were similar. He believed that the two thought very similarly and had, you know, cased and stalked their victims before committing the crime. And also, he believed that it was a fantasy homicide, a fantasy killing, just like his, based on what he's seen in the case. And so, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. Another serial killer talking about this crime here. Other interesting items collected. There was a dark red spot on apparently some uncased pillows, mattress items. There were some larger stains and some smaller stains, some of which were tested. And when it says tested, I'm assuming we're thinking about possible blood here because of the reddish brown stains that were mentioned. It didn't really go into much detail if it was tested positive for human blood or animal blood or if there's any connection to the victims at this time. So that's something that's going to come out later, but that could be massive evidence as well for the prosecution. Really interesting there. I'm going to go into a little bit more in detail about the search warrant. Those were just the items collected. Okay, so as I'm looking at the search warrant, again, just to point out a couple other notable details about it, there was a motion to unseal it recently. It was unsealed, so they talk about that at the beginning of the search warrant, and then they talk about the property that was searched. So this was in Pullman, Washington, and this is the Idaho suspect's apartment, and it was school housing, and it was searched. Police did have specific items that they were looking for and would seize if they found those items. So some of the items they mentioned were blood or other bodily fluids or human tissue or skin cells or items with blood or other bodily fluids or human tissue or skin cells on the items. So a lot of information there. And when you're talking about small items like that, you know, small DNA, it basically opens up the search warrant to really search everything, every nook and cranny, every crevice for potential evidence. And so it really just allows them to do a very detailed search and be able to do that willingly and legally, according to the search warrant. They were also looking for knives. We know that potentially a K-bar, a large K-bar knife with the United States Marine Corps emblem potentially was used in this crime, since there was a sheath left behind. Now, the autopsy would show if that type of knife could fit. I haven't seen much information about that yet, if that particular knife matches up or if it's not ruled out as a potential murder weapon. But police did mention they were looking for other sharp tools, so any dagger or sword. And then they were also looking for sales receipts of those items. So that just gives you more insight of what police are looking for. Every little piece of evidence that can connect these dots, including the receipts of those items, every small detail matters in a circumstantial case. You have images, digital images or paper images, that show the victims. So again, they're looking for a victim connection at the residence. And then they're also looking for clothing items, they mentioned, specifically the diamond pattern sole shoes that was collected at the crime scene. So they did not mention that they collected shoes in this search warrant. However, I'm wondering, potentially the suspect got rid of the shoes and they're gone. But the pattern could have been collected at the scene of the apartment that was searched. So I'm wondering if they did some forensic analysis just around the flooring and actually spotted that pattern. That wasn't quite mentioned in here either. So I'm really curious about that. And then they did mention data compilations. Okay, so again, they're looking for, whether it's on paper or electronic data, the planning or the interest of this crime. So they're looking for any data to show that, including Wi-Fi logs or metadata. This could be from anything from photos and social media posts or cell phones, computers, tablets, all that type of stuff, including the paper versions of ledgers or lists. You know, maybe there was a list detailing what the steps were in this crime that were carried out, because police do believe it was planned. They believe it was pre-planned, and they are confident that there would be some sort of data to connect that theory. They're looking for digital storage devices as well. And they did mention that they were consulting with forensic experts to dig up all this information. And gosh, there's a lot of information they can get from everything from app accounts and videos and documents. Even if it was deleted or manipulated, they're going to be able to determine, okay, did somebody actually delete this information on this particular time and day? That would be interesting if there was searches done about this particular crime or searches on the victims and that information was deleted around the time of the crime, maybe before or right after. All that stuff matters. So that's really interesting. They're going to definitely look at the internet searches. That's going to be very telling potentially if he is in fact the person responsible for this. They're going to also be looking at GPS data, satellite data, and the IP logs. They're going to be looking at all that different information that has to be documented in this search warrant. Specifically, they mentioned they're searching for passwords and phrases and codes. They're even looking for, you know, fingerprints or other items or methods that could operate a device. So they're even looking for that information, which I thought was really interesting. They're also collecting evidence that shows the Idaho suspect lived there or was in possession or ownership of that property. That's really important because the items collected from that property could link the person that lives there, right? And if there were other people that lived there, that could complicate the case. If it's just Brian Koberger and they're finding mail and bills and licensing documents, things like that, that show that he is the person living there, that also is taken into consideration. The supplemental disclosure DNA test was really interesting as well, that was mentioned in the search warrant. because the Idaho State Crime Lab obtained a DNA profile from the sheath, and then it mentioned how they connected that to the trash that originated from the Koberger residence. So they compared that. It matched to the father, and that linked Brian Koberger to this case. Now, they mentioned specifically they did not want to consider the DNA evidence as supportive of the probable cause statement, because if the DNA somehow was considered inadmissible, then the ruling would not impact the finding of the rest of the probable cause for this warrant. So I thought that was interesting that they mentioned that. They were certainly covering their basis there to make sure that they still had a solid probable cause statement and that it wouldn't be thrown out and it could potentially jeopardize the case. So that was interesting there. Moving down a little bit more into the search warrant, there was specifically, they mentioned in the search warrant that there was a significant amount of blood from the victims. So they included spatter, so blood spatter, and cast off, which would be from an object due to its motion would create that cast off. So they did mention that was found, that was located. So that's a first for me knowing that information, because it was not in the arrest warrant. I'm seeing it now in the search warrant. They believed that based on that, all of that blood, that most likely it was transferred to Koberger, whether it be on his person, his clothing, his shoes. And so because of that, and knowing the vehicle data information, the phone records lining up around the murders, that most likely that blood or trace evidence would be on him or his clothing, his shoes, and would also be most likely at the residence because of the proximity, okay, and the fact that, well, here's an interesting side note. A former FBI agent mentioned that the person committing this crime would have been within a 3-hour radius of the crime scene based on a few factors. One, the crime scene was committed, or the crime was committed around 4 a.m. to 4:25 a.m. in the morning, and the sun would be going up around 7 a.m. So to keep the disguise of darkness, this person would have most likely driven to a nearby area to hide themselves. So knowing that, the close proximity of that crime most likely would be the case. And then also the fact that this person who committed this violent crime would most likely be exhausted after the adrenaline and the emotion that would go into something like that. They'd be very tired and they would certainly need to regroup essentially. And they believe that they wouldn't be traveling very far after committing such a crime. So I just thought that was an interesting analysis. And sure enough, you know, Brian Koberger's residence being about 10 minutes away from Moscow, Idaho. So not very far away. Now, because of that information that I mentioned with the potential transfer of DNA or trace evidence, they justified that most likely that evidence would still be at his residence. And so they wanted to search his residence and also believe that a possible murder weapon would also be at that residence. Now, they did not find a murder weapon. They did not find a knife. They did not find any evidence of that. So that is still outstanding as of today, January 19th, 2023. Now, they believed that the person committing this crime would plan that crime, and it would most likely be planned in a residence, in a private area, so not somewhere that would be public. And so because of that specific thought process, again, justifies the search warrant that the evidence they would be looking for would most likely be in a residence, a private area, where they could take the time to plan this crime. So I thought that was an interesting insight there as well. They did mention in the search warrant that evidence could remain on devices or media for infinite periods of time after the communication originally took place, even if it was deleted by the user. So they mentioned that they were going to try to recover any information from a forensic examiner, which justifies them actually collecting specific items, physical items, so they can actually take those items back to the lab and do a deep analysis, because it would take time. It would take days and weeks, maybe even months, to sift through all of that data. And so again, the search warrant is justifying collecting physical items, such as the computer tower that I mentioned earlier. Also, another interesting insight in the search warrant was the other devices potentially synced with other devices. So they would be looking to get access to that information. So that could also open up the case even more if, for example, police collected a computer that happened to be synced up with another phone. Now they have a whole nother device that they can look into and find more data and more information. And it's just kind of a trail and a puzzle that they will be piecing together. But that digital evidence, whether it's deleted, can be recovered. But they did make an interesting point that because special software or, you know, the use of special settings are usually required to delete that information, that most likely all of it would not be deleted. So their belief is that there most likely is some sort of evidence and that not all of it would have been deleted. Maybe some of it was deleted, but because of those settings, those initial settings on a device, it may have kept some data that could be recovered for evidence. So that's another really interesting piece there. Another notable item mentioned in the search warrant was the date range that they were collecting this data from, which was August 21st, 2022 to November 14th, 2022. That's important because there was evidence that Brian Koberger potentially stalked his victims as early as August 21st. There's phone data to corroborate that. I think there was at least 12 different occasions where he had been near that residence, according to cell tower evidence. And so they mentioned that as well. Yeah, so that's a lot of information, you all, a lot of information in that search warrant. I hope that made sense. I went through a lot of details in this search warrant, and it definitely provided more insight. I hope it provided more insight for you in terms of what law enforcement is looking for and what they collected that would help on the prosecution side. It will be interesting to see how the defense attacks those items and what is going to be admissible, what's not going to be admissible. Brian Koberger has a hearing in June of 2023, so we're still a ways away from that. But again, this gives more insight in just how he was caught and how he could potentially be convicted now that he is caught. And that is the end of this episode. If you would like to connect with me or have any thoughts about this case or others, you can always reach out. I'm on social media. Again, this is Dev with Crime Hive. You all take care.
Crime Hive.
Crime Hive.
True crime buzz.